Good morning, Jean. How are you today?
Good morning, Tony. Here I am working from home, all on lockdown. So I really nice to hear you again. It's a long time since we've spoken, isn't it?
It's been a bit of a while. It's been a bit of a while. I think last time we spoke, it was in the middle of summer. So
That's right.
slightly different scenario to that we face at the moment. It's pretty cold out there. Not good for the garden, is it?
Not particularly, but on the other hand, I can't say that it isn't good for the garden for the simple reason that a lot of plants, particularly things like strawberries and raspberries and all the soft fruit, really need a period of cold in order to have the most amount of fruit on the bushes and the plants later on. So, although it is cold out there, the sun is actually shining like mad here at the moment. So,
Yeah.
not a problem really. I don't mind the cold weather as long as it's not snowing and it's not absolutely pouring with rain. That's the problem.
Well, I think you're safe from both of those at the moment, but
I think so.
it does leave us with the gardener's problem of frozen ground or very hard
Yeah.
ground. What, how do you get round that at this time of year?
You just leave it alone. Quite seriously, leave it alone. At the moment, a lot of people are talking about no-dig methods, etc. So, and we'll talk about that, today or another time. But what you've got to be careful of is that a lot of people at the moment are mulching. And so, a mulch is something that you put on the top of the ground to repel weeds, and to actually encourage something like bindweed, for instance, to come up to the surface, so that when you take the plastic mulch off, for instance, then you can actually get hold of the bindweed and pull it out much easier. The majority of mulches, of course, are traditional, and so they're manure or mushroom compost or stable manure, which you can buy in bags from the garden centre. Now, the only thing about that is that if you put a mulch of any sort onto frozen ground, you're keeping that cold in the ground, and you really don't want that. So either get your mulch on early, which is about the beginning of November, or leave it until the frost is out of the ground, probably end of February, beginning of March, with luck.
So is mulch a form of sort of compost that you would sort of make during the year if you were doing it yourself?
Absolutely. You can, I mean, that's the best way, in all honesty, these days, Tony, because, we're all into sustainability and we're all into saving everything, don't throw anything away. And so your own garden compost is absolutely fantastic. The only thing you've got to be careful about is if you've got food, obviously, you don't put that in your bins, in your compost bin, because it does encourage the rats and the mice in there. But other than that, literally compost whatever you can,
And of course, the foxes
remembering.
as well.
Oh, absolutely. All sorts of things go in compost bins, slow worms, all sorts of things. But we can talk about compost in detail sometime because it's quite an interesting subject, actually.
Who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought it? Mulch. Yeah, we will get back to that one. Now, one of the things that we tried doing before Christmas was to, and I didn't realise you could do this, was to plant some veg that were going to be ready for Christmas. Now, the potatoes came up fine, although a little early. The sprouts we're still waiting for because they seem to have been attacked by all sorts of things. They're not in the normal ground. They're in a one of these large, we've got three large grow boxes in our garden. They're about 2 meters long, about a meter wide, and made with railway sleepers. So the sprouts didn't actually come up. They looked like they'd been attacked by caterpillars. And you'd have thought if they were in a box, they'd be safe from that sort of thing, but they're not, are they?
No, because of course the caterpillars come from the eggs laid by the butterflies earlier in the summer. But I would suggest that perhaps, have you got pigeons in your area?
Yeah, we've got pigeons lurking around the house. They kind of, well, they just lurk and make an awful mess.
Yeah, they do actually. Do they roost anywhere near you as
Yeah,
well?
actually, on the side of the house.
Right, so I mean, have you tried, putting something like a dangly CD or something there?
Yeah, we've done that. We've
You've done
got
everything.
plastic spikes, which are, it's supposed to be reasonably bird friendly. They don't damage the birds, but no, they're
They're there.
There's about half a dozen of them. And as I say, it's two houses. There's a pathway down the middle. And they sit on one side and the other side on the pipes that come out from the side of the house. And not good. And we've tried in many ways. We're still trying to get rid of them. They're a bit of a pest. But they cause problems, I do believe.
Oh, they do. You do need to be a bit careful with them. I mean, I don't like sort of getting rid of any sort of animal, to be quite honest, but I do like to deter the pigeons if I can. There is a thing that you could spray on, you know, which is organic, because, I mean, I don't know whether you know, but I do not like to spray anything that I'm going to eat. I really don't.
I'm with you on that one.
I really, really don't. So what I tend to use is a garlic spray, which is it's made up of crushed garlic, ordinary soap.
Ordinary soap?
Ordinary, you know, washing up liquid.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy-duty washing up liquid, and a tablespoon of cooking oil, like rapeseed oil or something. Don't use olive oil. It's a bit too expensive. But... you know, and I'm all for saving some money, you know, to do other things. But, rapeseed oil, sunflower oil, anything like that, whiz it all around in a liquidizer and spray that on. And that actually deters green fly, black fly as well. So that might work.
I was going to say that because a lot of the pesticides that you can get these days have all sorts of things in that, as you've rightly already said, you don't really want on your food. And, having tried some of that, they don't work either.
Well, no, exactly. And the other thing too, you know, black fly, people, particularly if they grow things like your cabbages, any of your cabbages, they always get black fly. And what you need to look around your garden to see if you've got host plants, because the black fly overwinters on Philadelphus, which is, you know, the mock orange. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got that in your garden, you're bound to get black fly on your veg.
I don't know about the black fly, so it's just that we were hoping to get these stems of sprouts, and it just never happened. Say the potatoes worked fine. And, of course, being in boxes, the ground, we had an awful lot of rain, and the ground got very, very wet. So we didn't quite get the harvest we wanted to off of the potatoes, because some of them were rather more soggy than we wanted. But we're now into sort of the middle of January, and say, as we've already mentioned, hard ground. What should we be doing apart from the mulching and that in the garden at the moment?
In all honesty, not very much in your boxes. Let's start with your raised beds, first of all. Let's leave those alone completely. Just wait. Just make sure that, you know, the weeds are gone, and you're not sort of waiting for them to pop their seeds out later on.
Yeah.
So weeding is one thing which you could do, particularly if you've got a nice raised bed like you've got.
Yeah.
Lawns, keep off them. That's the biggest thing. Don't even think about doing anything. My neighbour has actually strimmed his up the road.
Really?
He's just daft, actually. No, he strimmed it, but unfortunately he hasn't raked the top lot off. And so, because it's a very small lawn, and so all this dead grass is just sitting on top of the good grass underneath. He's going to have trouble later. So keep off your lawn. You don't need to walk on it at all if you can. And then have a look around. Don't be too tidy in your garden either, which is the big thing going out at the moment. We all tend to say, oh, I'll chop that off, and I'll do this and I'll do that. Wait for a while, because you may have hedgehogs in there, and all the sort of bugs and beasties that are laying in the leaf litter all need to actually be there so that we get a complete ecological turnaround all through the year.
I'm going to say, who deals with their lawn in January? Because it doesn't grow. And surely if you cut it back, it's going to make a bit of a mess, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. And that's why, well, it had got long, you see. And he said, oh, I can't bear it long. So he took a strimmer to it. He didn't even mow it. He took a strimmer to it. But anyway, there you go. He'll learn, won't he?
Yeah, he should learn to actually mow his lawn for one final time, probably in October, I would guess,
exactly.
Which would be probably the best thing. You mentioned in there hedgehogs. You don't see too many of them, do you?
You don't, but they are around.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I'm going to a talk at the beginning of February all about the hedgehog man. And there's a lot of rescue places around.
The hedgehog man?
The hedgehog man, yes. Really good, actually. I've heard him once before. And he brings a couple of hogs around that haven't been able to go back into the wild for one reason or another. But all these rescue places, yes, they've got them, and the one near me has got about 15 in at the moment, because they were late babies, and therefore if they're not weighty enough, they don't overwinter properly. So
yeah.
People have been popping them back in, and they'll release them now once the weather gets a bit better.
Okay, so look after the hogs when you see them, I think is probably the message there. Now, so it being January, can't do much in the garden. What should be in the garden right now? Or what's in the garden?
Ah, now then, anybody who listens to me on BBC Radio will actually know that I am an absolute avid and passionate lover of Daphne. And I have got a large Daphne Belua, which is it's a tall one. And it is in full bloom, absolutely full bloom at the moment. The frost doesn't touch it. It's hardy, therefore, and the scent, Tony, I wish I could bottle it. I really, really do. Neighbours walk down, because it's an open-fronted garden, and neighbours walk down on the path with their dog, and you can see them. They're like the Bisto kid. Do you remember the Bisto kids?
I do.
Yeah.
They're giving me age away there, I'm afraid.
And me too. But, you know, they walk down there and they go, where's that smell coming from? And it is absolutely glorious. So that's one of my favourites that's out at the moment. You don't need to think loads of flowers. Although when I went down to open my greenhouse yesterday to get a little bit of fresh air in there, I walked down across the gravel path, lo and behold, there was an iris out. And it's a little dwarf iris called Iris unguicularis. And it's an absolute dreamboat. It's a pale lavender colour. It doesn't last for more than a couple of days, but then more come up. So I've got that in the garden. What else have I got? That's nothing that's flowering, but I've got loads of colour in other things. You know, I've got a bright, bright lime green pittosporum, which is fabulous. And that gives a great big woof at the end of the garden. You know, it's a whammy down there.
Yeah. Now, we're only about sort of 35 days into winter, because everybody thinks that once we're in January, spring's around the corner.
Yeah.
But it's about 55 days away is spring. And
absolutely.
The weather can do all sorts of different things at this time of year. It can get colder or it can just get very mild. And we can get on with doing stuff in the garden, but you still got the problem of not knowing when you're going to get a late frost and that. So what should we be looking to do in the next couple of months? I know we can't do anything right now because the ground is too hard.
Yeah.
What should we be doing sort of looking forward to sort of February and March?
Well, having a look I'm an avid seed collector reader. People send in seed catalogues. And I can't resist them. I just have to read them. And so have a look to see what it is in there that you could actually grow yourself, which are quite nice. I mean, sweet peas, for instance, you could put those in any time from now on, as long as, you know, they're not out in the actual frozen ground. But you could, in actual fact, sow them in a cold greenhouse or even, dare I say, in a garage with light that comes in there. So you could sow your sweet peas now, and they'll be okay then to sort of plant up. They're fairly hardy plants, actually.
Hmm.
And I keep looking at things because, I just want to get on with it, you know. And that's what I think everybody says. Let's get on with it. One word of warning.
Yeah.
And don't sow your tomato seeds too early. Right. And the reason for that is because we will get, I'm sure, after this cold spell has gone, we'll get a really warm spell. And then everything will go whoosh. And all these plants on your windowsill will get leggy. and then you won't know what to do with them. So I would wait until the end, middle to the end of March to sow your tomato seeds. They will grow. Don't worry about them. They will really, really grow.
Yeah, they like the sunshine. And one of my dogs, that's not around these days, but one of my dogs used to love, actually, when he saw the tomato plants, there's a tomato, and he ate it. He'd eat them. He'd eat tomatoes till they came out of his ears. And, you know, to be truthful, he actually did, but that's another matter. So we've got a couple of things that we can do for February and March. Where do we go from there?
Well, in March, of course, you're on to rose pruning. Mm-hmm. And you're on to looking at some of the shrubs that are there. So as a rule of thumb, anything that flowers in the spring can be pruned just afterwards. So you've got Forsythia, for instance. That can be pruned almost directly after flowering. And please, please don't do what I call lollipop pruning, which is taking a shears to it and making a ball, because it is the worst thing you can do to make a plant grow out and out and out and out and out. So all you're ending up with is flowers and leaves right on the end of the branches, and all the rest is bare. So if you think of, say, something like a hydrangea, for instance, you've left the heads on the hydrangea all through the winter, because you're protecting the buds underneath it. Now, what people tend to do is they tend to do a trim over the top. Don't do that. Go right down into the middle of it. You rejuvenate your bush there by taking out a third of the old growth every year. So by the end of 3 years, you've got a brand new bush coming up, or a shrub. So it's the old dead stuff, or the older wood. Mm. You want to encourage young growth from the base all the time.
Mm.
So that's a pruning. And roses, of course, March, really.
Yeah.
If you prune them in February, and a friend of mine who's a head gardener said, I've got so many, Jean, I have to start in January. That's fine. But if then we get that warm spell in February, the buds will start to grow, and then March winds come and they take all that new growth off. So you're having to reprune anyway. So my advice is always leave it until middle of March, really, to prune your roses.
Well, there we go. We're up to date with one or two things to be preparing for the first part of the year. But for now, really, it's a case of go away, make your garlic, washing up liquid and cooking oil work. Jean Grivin, it's been good to catch up this morning. Hopefully we can do some more in about a month's time. And we'll come back and do some more gardening then. But for now, Jean, thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.